Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. We have Mike Cosentino here with, we're having an exciting issue of Democratic Perspectives this morning. At least we think we're gonna chat a little bit. Bill Timmerman is here. Bill, what are we talking about this morning?
Well, we're not gonna talk about Steve flying off to Death Valley, but what we're gonna talk about is who owns the future.
So our regular co-host is at the bottom of Death Valley, but he's living. And not crawling around asking for water, but yeah, he left us to figure out the future. We get to do all the, is there an emerging Democratic majority?
It's a funny thing, but back 2003, 2004, you had Karl Rove running around the country talking about a permanent Republican majority.
Right, yeah.
They were riding high, after Bush's election. And, of course, a year later, he was reelected. So it began to look as though the Republicans' prediction that they were going to rule forever was going to work out. But about the same time, in 2004, a couple of researchers from Center for American Progress put out a book called The Emerging Democratic Majority.
Right.
And their argument was that the demographic trends in the country favored the Democrats. And what they were talking about was basically fewer older white people and more minorities. And there were some other trends that they brought in. Of course, for most of us looking around at what's going on in the country, what we see is gridlock. We see the country divided 50-50. It's particularly true in the Senate, where they can't seem to pass anything. Right.
Right, yeah.
Of course, in the Senate, that's to some extent a function of the new filibuster rule, where you got to have 60% of the 60 senators to pass anything. But we look around, what we see is gridlock in the electorate, gridlock in Washington. And, so the question is, what is the real evidence that this gridlock can be broken by anybody's emerging majority, right?
Right.
So what we want to do today is look at some of the identifiable trends, particularly the demographic trends, how the electorate is currently divided and what the statistics tell us, and then see if we can assign any credibility to the claims of both parties that they represent the future.
We knew where Rove's ideas were coming from. The white guys vote, and people with money could buy votes, and so we knew where he could say, "But we can control this. We got this down because the others don't vote." No, what's the Democrats? Why do they think? Their coalition seems to be the minorities, of course, gay, women. Is his coalition that we know is going to vote for him? But we got to add professionals. The exit polls in 2012, not just young. He's got the youth vote also. That coalition, young, professional, young and old, women, minorities, and gay, is going to be tough to beat.
Well, probably the easiest way to look at trends is to look at the presidential election, because there you only got one number, right? And it's clear.
Yeah.
Things get more complicated when you look at Congress or
the states,
or when you look, Lord knows, at the states.
Yeah.
But if you look at this, at the last election, which we seemingly went on forever, but is now over with.
The first Democratic candidate to win with more than 50% of the vote since Franklin. We want to throw that in. 332 electoral votes.
Yeah, but he won by over 50% of the popular vote, not once, but twice, remember.
That's right.
But if we look at the breakdown of the vote, what we see is that in 2012, the minority vote was 28% of the electorate, and that's up several points. I mean, it was 14% in 1988 and 26% in 2008, and it's 28% in 2012.
Some guys are pegging that at 2% growth a year.
Yeah, about that. Now, here's the interesting thing. Overall, minority voters voted 80% for Obama.
I mean, take that back. It's 2% growth a cycle, four-year cycle.
Yeah, yeah. The overall minority vote was 80%. And African-Americans, 93% voted for Obama. And you say, well, that's probably understandable. He's, you know, he's a homeboy.
First guy, the first one.
Yeah. But what's interesting is Hispanics, and this includes, you know, Cubans, people from Cuban origin, Mexican origin. So it's a mixed bag, Puerto Ricanos. But the Hispanic vote went 71% to 27%. And Asians, who only represent, you know, maybe 3% of the total vote, still voted for him 73 to 26. So right away, if that's indicative of a trend, and not just specifically because Obama himself represents a minority, it looks as though, you know, 80% overall is pretty strong. And when you think about it, 28% of the electorate votes 80% for a single candidate. That's significant, particularly when the trend is up.
They weren't worried too much because, you know, there's only 12% African-American in the U.S. And so, the numbers were, you know, like obviously trending hugely his way, but it wasn't that many votes you throw in the other mixed.
Yeah, they thought they were competitive with the Hispanic vote, but then there's all of this business about immigration. I mean, Sheriff Joe probably cost them, I don't know how many votes nationally.
Yeah.
You know. And then again, if you look at the women's vote, women voted for Obama 55% to 44%. Single women voted for 67% to 31%.
Yeah.
Now, it's true that he won the white male vote. Romney won the white male vote by a similar percentage.
Right.
But it was a smaller percentage win for Romney, even amongst white males.
I like the professionals, 55 to 42 for Obama. And like I said, that's young and old.
Yeah. And it represents a fairly small percentage of the electorate when you think about it, because when we're talking about professionals, we're talking about people with advanced degrees, right? We're talking about people with masters and doctorates and so forth. So they're not a large percentage of the population, but it's a growing percentage.
In the Verde Valley. But no, go ahead.
And, well, you know, I mean, come on.
Okay, guys.
North Carolina is a perfect example. The research triangle in North Carolina, which is where all the universities and research institutes are, voted overwhelmingly Democratic this time. And of course, they had the North Carolina was one of those swing states, you know, a vote like this is significant in a state that has, an urban-rural split where the urban vote counts significantly.
Now, Obama got 9 out of 10 swing states, by the way.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's indicative of something, I think.
I would think.
Because the Republicans really believed that they were going to carry the swing states.
They really did.
They believed right until the last minute that they were going to carry the swing states. Now, let's look at young voters. Voters between the ages of 18 and 29, that's 19% of the electorate. Obama won them 60 to 37, which is only slightly less than he won by in 2008.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, young voters are supposedly fickle, and the Republicans always figure that, yes, they came out for Obama once, but they might not do it again. They did.
Right.
So basically what you're looking at is that the margin of victory for Obama in 2008, which everybody thought was sort of a one-off, right?
Right.
You know, the novelty of having an African-American president.
Right.
Turned out to be perfectly repeatable.
Yep.
So, as far as the national trends go, as measured by presidential elections, the folks that figure that the demographic trends favor the Democrats, it looks like they're probably right.
Right.
Now, to the extent that this was the unique effect of Obama's appeal, that's a question. I mean, suppose that the Democrats nominate for the next election a less appealing candidate. Will they still get these margins among these demographic groups that we're talking about? That's unclear.
Right.
But I suspect, say, for example, if Hillary Clinton wins,
right.
I mean, the nomination, then, you know, I think the women's vote will be larger. The black vote may be smaller, but, you know, I think the Hispanic vote has, unless the Republicans manage to get themselves free of this immigration horror, I don't think that they'll be able to make significant inroads in the Hispanic vote.
Stepping back from the numbers for a minute, I think that Democrats have always had the issues. They've always, education, you know, labor, they've always had the issues, but they couldn't get the vote. But with now being able to have this coalition of these groups, the Democrats, one of the researchers talk about the Republicans having to let go of this quasi-libertarian view of government, that Americans want government in their lives. We believe in certain roles for government in our lives.
Well, even the Tea Party likes its Medicare.
I keep asking for their checks. You know what? Nobody sent me one yet. I'm disappointed because I expect them to demonstrate their beliefs a little more tangibly than they're doing.
Well, let's not just talk about the Democratic Party's prospects. What about the Republican Party's prospects? Where are they strong? I mean, for one thing, it seems to me we've got probably as a result of the gerrymandering. Remember, the Republican majorities...
No, probably about it. Definitely. I'm sorry.
The Republican Party majorities in state legislatures and their control of a majority of the governorships. You got the numbers on the state legislature?
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
They're pretty stunning.
I do have that. 30 Republican and 19 Democrat, one independent. And so, yeah, 30
Well, that's... what is that? Republican governors?
No, that's state legislature.
Oh, and that's the state legislatures
where
a single party controls majorities in
right.
both houses.
22 states will have single party government one way or the other, mostly Republican this year, this coming
yeah.
term.
So it's 30
Republican legislatures controlled.
Yeah.
25 Republican governors, 16 Democrats.
Yeah. So, with that kind of advantage, when it came up to reapportionment from
right.
the census in 2010, then reapportionment, it's interesting that the Republicans were able to control the redistricting.
Absolutely.
And they were able to gerrymander it, and that's probably why they retained control of the House in this last election. In fact, it's almost certainly why they retained control.
I forget how many hundreds of safe districts they created in addition to what they had
yeah.
before. Now, it didn't happen in Arizona. We want to mention that.
Arizona has a very nonpartisan and a very honest and open redistricting setup. I mean, the Republicans challenged it, but their challenge has failed. And so Arizona created a lot of competitive districts, and Democrats won some of them. So Democrats increased the number of representatives in the state legislature, and we also won a few congressional
seats. We want to pat the Independent Redistricting Committee of Arizona. We want to pat the Arizona voter on the back, first of all, for taking that power away from the legislature like it is in a lot of states, putting it in the hands of the voters. But to create this independent redistricting committee and not allow what's happening in all those other states, so many other states, the Republicans or the Democrats, but the Republicans have raised it to a fine art.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, the net result of that is that the Republican control of the House is probably secure until the next census and the next
reapportionment, whatever you want to call it.
Now, we're not certain about that because a lot of the House vote, you know, presidential candidates do have coattails, right?
Right.
Obama's weren't significant because of the gerrymandering, but it's conceivable that the Democrats could get closer. But I think that the Republican control of the House is pretty secure. Now, it remains to be seen whether they retain control of the state legislatures and the number of state legislatures and the governorships that they currently hold. But they have a good shot at it, I think, as opposed to national elections where national issues and these demographic trends that we've been talking about come to the fore.
I want to talk a little bit more about democratic trends on the national level, but we want to talk about our friends here who are helping us out with democratic perspective. Democrats of the Red Rocks, the Sedona political organization, has lots of things going on, which is one of the reasons why they're such a dynamic and a popular organization. They have a movie every month at the Sedona Library.
That's the third Thursday?
The third Thursday, 6 o'clock. I've gone to several of them. They're very well attended, and they're very well done. They got a good crew that knows what they're doing over there, and the library is gracious enough to have a really good space over there. We have our door breakfast every month at the old Sedona Bar and Grill, and that is the third Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know.
Third Wednesday is the movie. Third Thursday is the
okay,
breakfast.
Okay, let's get it right.
Yes, get it right here.
Or we'll be in big trouble.
That's cool. Maybe we'll get some calls and say, excuse us, sir. But anyway, the door breakfasts are wonderfully attended, have great speakers. If you want some of the inside, politics, we have a lot of Arizona politicians showing up, crunching the numbers at the state level, talking about all sorts of things. We've tapped into Steve Williamson, has been able to tap into the universities and get us some great speakers.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't forget the annual meeting. You're one shot in.
We can get that day. We can get that day right. February 10th at
St. Andrews.
February 10th at St. Andrews. That's the one meeting. The way this organization works, they have one big general membership meeting, and that is February 10th at St. Andrews. See, if you want to check them out, you can go there. Democrats of the Verde Valley, a Cottonwood-based organization, also is helping us out, put on this show. And so we want to give them a little bit of a shout-out.
Yeah.
They have their meeting at Randall's Restaurant on the fourth Thursday of every month. And
so come on by.
Meet
people.
Right. We always have
get involved.
Randall always fixes a little something. Randall and I go way back. And last meeting, we had a couple of local city council candidates. Among other things, that was the highlight of the meeting. But they were very outspoken. It's how local politics can get. It can be pretty raucous and a lot of fun. Democrats at Verde Valley, Democrats at Red Rocks are two of our sponsoring organizations, and
they got websites, folks. If we've garbled up any of this,
right.
Mike,
get the real information. Go to they both have websites. Just put in their names, and you'll get to them.
Just look up, Google Democrats of the Red Rocks, Democrats of the Verde Valley, and they'll direct you right there.
And they both have good websites, I might add.
And you can find out.
And don't forget, you can always catch this information, by the way, on vvid.org.
That's our website.
That's our website.
Where you can hear podcasts of all of these wonderful scintillating radio broadcasts. you don't have to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning to listen to us.
I thought scintillating was one of the seven words we can't say.
Oh, well.
Tell us about the national.
Okay, it's got more than two syllables. I'm sorry.
That's right.
So, I think if we get back to here to how are things trending and what does the future look like, one of the things I think that the pundits have overlooked, and I think certainly the Republicans have overlooked, and I'm not sure even the Democrats have paid close enough attention to, and that is that despite all the fighting and cat scratching in Washington, the Democrats have managed to pass some significant legislation that affects people's lives. And think about it.
You think the 30 million people that are going to get health care?
Well, the Republicans complained about Medicare back in the 60s, how it was socialized medicine, was going to ruin everything. But you know what? Here it is 40 years later. People really love their Medicare. Everybody does. Republicans do. Democrats do. Everybody likes
Medicare. And I don't want to make it because it's a giveaway, because it raises their quality of life. It makes everything about their lives and better, and including their children's lives.
And unlike a lot of government programs, when they pay in, they get back.
Right? There you go.
Assuming you live to be 65.
That's right.
Well, we have passed a national health care bill, which everybody's fought and screamed and yelled about.
Not everybody.
And the Republicans have called it socialized medicine. But you know what? I think once people, once it's implemented in 2014, and once it's had a few, they've had a few years of it under their belts, people are going to like it a lot. They're going to like it as much as they like Medicare, because it's going to mean medical care for their kids. It's going to mean that they can't get refused insurance because they have a pre-existing condition. It's going to mean a lot of good stuff for people who aren't currently covered, and there are lots of them. There are millions of people who don't currently have coverage. And another thing I'd like to talk about is the amazing sea change that has to do with the integration of gay people into the mainstream in the United States. We ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They have open service in the military. Gay marriage has been passed and approved in a number of states. Young people particularly don't see being gay as an issue and as a divisive issue, right, the way older people who grew up when gays were discriminated against very heavily have certain opinions, but those opinions aren't being carried on by the next generation. Gay or straight doesn't seem to matter to a lot of young people. That will have an effect. Suppose Obama manages to get a reasonable immigration reform through the Congress, and there's a good chance that he might because he has Republican co-sponsorship. He even has McCain coming out for it. I think the business wing of the Republican Party really wants immigration reform.
Oh, absolutely.
So if he gets that passed, maybe the Democrats have locked up the Hispanic vote for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Unless the Republicans make this a real bipartisan effort and stop dragging their feet on it.
Let me say, keep your statistics, but I want to mention both in the gay vote and in the Latino vote, we're talking not just about gays and Latinos. Many Americans realize that the discrimination against the gay population was wrong. And so when the Democrats come out so clearly in favor of it, that drags a whole bunch of other people along with it. Same thing with, this is incredibly evident in Latino populations. My mom's legal, my sister isn't, my son is. I mean, and so once you give them a path, once you make them legal, then all of those people become incredibly favorable to the Democratic Party. So it's not just the gay numbers. It's not just the undocumented or the illegal immigrant numbers. It's all of the people that are affected by this.
Right. Well, and if we want to look at it from a more bipartisan perspective.
Do we?
Yes,
go ahead.
I think so.
All right,
we're all Democrats here, but, you know, you have to think about the country as a whole. And it seems to me that if all of these things work, despite the fact that they were introduced and passed and defended by Democrats.
Right.
I think one of the things this will do is it will reduce the influence of the extremists in the Republican Party, make the Republican Party more reasonable, and from a bipartisan perspective, it might mean that we can get some significant legislation passed in the country and we get to work on things like reducing unemployment, dealing with
economic issues, infrastructure, education,
infrastructure, global warming, all of that.
Global
the Republican
warming.
Party may be more amenable to making deals on this. Before this election, they thought that simply refusing to pass any legislation, blocking everything, would result in Obama's defeat. Now that it hasn't.
Right.
And particularly if it turns out that the results of these things that did get passed make people's lives better, the Republicans may be willing to make more deals than they have been in the past, and that would be a good thing no matter what the actual content of the legislation, because it would mean an end to Washington that doesn't do anything at all.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, frankly, that would be a really good thing for the entire country. But, you know, American politics are based on our Constitution. Our Constitution has some quirks. And as a result of that, you know, this idea that the majority always wins is qualified in certain respects. You know, the obvious things are things like the Electoral College or the composition of the Senate. I mean, every state gets two senators. But that has some interesting effects, right? For example, I was looking at it the other day. Mayor Bloomberg in New York represents more than 30 times as many people as either of the senators from Wyoming. And why? Because the population of New York City is over 8 million.
Yeah.
Population of the entire state of Wyoming is about 500,000, give or take.
Right.
That means, so each of these senators represent 250,000 people. Mayor Bloomberg represents 8 million.
One mayor represents
one them. Mayor, yeah. So, you know, it's really kind of strange when you think that the senator from Wyoming has much more of an effect on national policy than Mayor Bloomberg does. I mean, I suppose you could argue that, but...
No, you're right.
But structurally, that's true. And so that is why, you know, you have situations where, you know, particularly in the Senate, where you have this 60-vote rule now, this sort of automatic filibuster of everything you don't, of anything you don't like, results in, you know, real disenfranchisement of lots of people. And
yeah, I think the Republicans, to use filibuster, now that everybody's so aware of it, in 2013, do so at their own peril. I want to jump back to the states for just a second. Is Arizona going to turn blue? I saw, and I'm using this for, you're going to use Texas as an example. I read where the Houston Chronicle said that Texas will be blue in 12 years if nothing happens, even if they don't go after the Hispanic registration. Right now they have large Hispanic population, but many of them aren't registered to vote. Register them, then you hasten that 12-year time frame for Texas to turn blue. How about Arizona? Are we going to turn blue?
I think a lot of that depends on some of the national legislation that's going to be passed. For example, comprehensive immigration reform takes a whole package of divisive politics right out of the Arizona context, right?
Right.
Because there'll be, you know, no more horseback patrols on the border. There'll be, you know, Sheriff Joe won't be able to parade people around in pink underwear anymore.
So if you're saying sort of Arizona politicians can't use fear to rally people, then they'll have to actually use regular issues or maybe economic issues or educational issues or domestic issues to get people interested.
Well, the big one apart from immigration in Arizona, it seems to me, is education. I mean, it's long been a fact.
How long can you lie to yourself and say you're not last?
Yeah. I mean, public education in Arizona is a real crisis, and you know, something has to be done about it.
And nothing against our friends in Mississippi and Alabama, but being behind them is not. Go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say we don't really know. A lot of it is dependent on factors that we can't foresee. I mean, the demographic trends in Arizona are not the same as they are in the rest of the country, and so, you know, for a number of reasons, and we'll have to wait and see. There's one thing I want to say, though, before we get out of here.
Yeah, we are almost out of
time. That is, you know, Republicans are as aware as Democrats are of some of these demographic trends.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we probably have seen the sorts of things that the Republicans have done to try and suppress the turnout of minority voters. I mean, there's the whole Acorn business, the business with firing U.S. attorneys because they wouldn't bring voter fraud charges.
So if you can't win the vote, you don't let them vote.
Yeah, the way to win the vote is not to let these people that won't vote for you vote. Well, that didn't work out for them this election, and one has to hope that that they will abandon it.
Before we run out of time, that didn't work for them, and money didn't work for them. I guess it doesn't mean they're not going to keep trying both of those things.
Well, that's why we're here. I mean, I don't know any more than anyone else does who is going to win the future in terms of the two parties, but one thing I think is pretty clear, and that is that we are no longer going to have the kind of gridlock that we have had in the past, and that's a good thing, folks.
That is a good thing. That is a good thing to have. What do they say? It's not a party. It's a country. You can hear this and all our podcasts at vvid.org, Democratic Perspectives, and thank you to Democrats of the Red Rocks, Democrats of the Verde Valley. Check them out, folks.
Good morning, everyone. Get out and enjoy it.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.